Good evening, good evening. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you have tuned into Paradigm Shifters here on BBS Radio. And this week's Paradigm Shifter is a woman whose work is probably really well known to most people who would be listening to this show. Her latest book is Spirit Heals, Awakening a Woman's Inner Knowing for Self-Healing. And my guest is Meredith Young-Sowers. How are you, Meredith?
Oh, hello. I'm just fine. Glad to be with you tonight.
You've been busy shifting paradigms?
Oh, always, always.
I'm loving this book, but, you know, I'd like you to talk a little bit about, there's so many things I want to ask you about. One is your angel messenger cards.
Yes.
Are really familiar to many people, eh?
Yes, they are, the angelic messenger cards. There's the New World Library has just put out a new edition that sort of is an easier travel edition. But those cards have been extraordinary, and you know, people laugh when they say, "Well, now where did you get the idea for those cards?" And I was in the shower talking to Spirit and saying, "Why is it that people feel so incredibly disempowered, and what's a useful tool to help us trust our own guidance, our own knowing, our own inner self?" And so so the response was a divination system where people would choose the card, obviously, from their own true self and find what they need. And I love the idea. I've always loved flowers, and the very first time I had ever seen, actually, the image of an angel was when I was a little girl and I used to sit out in the garden with my father, who was a man of very few words, and that was the closest I could get to him. And as he'd be hoeing the different flower beds, I remember one night and this beautiful white-winged being just kind of floated across the garden and the lily bed. And you know, I was little, and I knew it was an angel. I knew the flowers were connected with their messages.
Hmm.
And so in the angelic messenger cards, the flowers are the messengers of the angels.
Wonderful. Oh, that's wonderful. And I've heard also that they're the antenna of universal consciousness, right?
Nice.
So I like both of those.
Nice.
They're very beautiful. And the other thing that you are famous for, and, you know, I keep saying I can't remember what the whole book was about, but you wrote Agartha,
yes.
And that was a true groundbreaker in its day, wasn't it?
Well, you know, it was, and it's so fascinating because I wrote the book not thinking anybody would ever read it, but I wrote it. I mean, who was I? I was an unknown author. I didn't even really know how to write very well. But here was this extraordinary experience of spirit happening in my life in a most phenomenal way to introduce me to the nature of love and the power of the universe. And I just had to write about it. I had to fumble my way along. And it was at that point, Jane Roberts, of course, all the Seth materials and the Pathwork material. But then, you know, this was one of the early ones. And in retrospect, as I look back and I read through Agartha, the information is as true today and the predictions as true today as when I wrote it and heard it in 1983.
I'm probably going to buy it again. I'm sure it's in a box somewhere.
Well, it's in a, there's a 10th anniversary edition that has an epilogue.
Okay.
People always wanted to know what happened to your husband, what happened to your marriage, because I had intentionally written in the things that would foreshadow the fact that after 22 years we were going to split up.
Oh my.
And so people wanted to know why. And one of the things I learned about
did
writing,
you remain friends?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
That I learned about writing early on from my editor was, she said, if you're going to write a book, write the truth and let the nuances be true. In other words, you want your reader to really see as clearly as they can exactly what was going on, your reaction to what was going on. So many writers, they write the travelogue, but what you want to know is, well, what were you thinking and feeling, and how is this changing your perceptions?
And so the incidents that are sort of colored by what a person was really feeling. And
exactly. So the power struggle that often sets up between a person who is waking up spiritually and the other person who isn't in the same place, and how when the universe reverses your position. I'd always been a very good support person, and my then husband had been a very good out front person and in the corporate world. So when we switched roles, neither one of us knew how to do that very well, and he felt enormously threatened.
Is he still your friend now?
Well, he is, but you know, once you're divorced, I mean, he's happily remarried, interestingly, to a woman with my same birth date. And I'm certainly happily remarried, been married almost 18 years. And so, you know, it's peaceful. Hmm. It's peaceful. And we did the very best we could. But when you come to the end of a relationship, you know, people didn't used to be married for 22 years. In other words, you know, you only lived till you were 40
right.
or 45. But now that we live so much longer, it is many times we complete our work with one person, you know, halfway through our life, and then what?
Well, I think that's actually a really interesting subject, because many people I know, myself included, had to part because of spiritual growth. Because
yeah.
it just becomes so discordant. You just can't exist in it, right?
You can't. And I think that the further you get down the path of spirituality, and that your whole life is informed by your connection to divinity and your commitment to do the very thing that you love the most and can make the best contribution in the world, and you really, you know, we have, I feel like what I do and what I write about and is really a healing mission. I mean, I feel like from that early experience that I was really given a mandate about learning about the power of love as the healing tool of the new millennium, and how it could be useful in healing our disconnect from spirit, and of course that means our body, our emotions, our intellect, healing our disconnect.
That's wonderful. So let's fast. Oh, I want to ask you also, what were you doing before? You were married, I know that. Were you a stay-at-home housewife?
I was. I had worked in, I had wanted to go to medical school out of college, and then I got married instead. And but I had always loved the miracle of the human body and was always fascinated by it. And so I had worked in and out of medicine in various ways as a secretary, as a research assistant, all kinds of ways. But when my children were young, I was blessed to be able to stay home with them. So at this point, I was staying home, yeah.
Oh, interesting. And then what launched, did you begin to channel? Was that it, or was it meditation?
What launched
your change?
Well, I had gone with my husband to a retreat. Had you heard of Bob Monroe? And Monroe Institute.
Yes, I sure
Journeys
have.
Out of the Body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my husband had read Bob Monroe's book, and it was Bob's experiences of out-of-body experiences. And so he wanted to have that kind of an experience. And so I decided to go with him. It was winter, and we lived in Buffalo. So it was, you know, it was like, okay, let's go someplace warm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking I would kind of sit on the porch and, you know, rock and have a nice suntan. But instead I ended up, of course, being part of the sessions, and I was the one that had some really phenomenal opening experiences that kind of began the process. And then I went home and practiced this very simple meditation process, and about 9 months later is when all of this huge shift began to take place. And within a matter of a few weeks, I had this extraordinary opening, as if I was moved, you know, in one morning's meditation, as if I was just drawn out of my body into this glorious and safe and sublimely peaceful experience of divinity, and recognizing that it was like I could look out over the world and I could see the power of love flowing around all around people, and people were just busy fighting and arguing and griping, and nobody was paying attention to what was right there.
Hmm.
And when I came back from that experience, it was with such a profound understanding, not in a mental level of how to talk about it, but at a spiritual level, that God was love and that we were all entirely safe. It was the illusion that we weren't.
Hmm. Wow. And this is, and for people who don't know, Robert Monroe did some wonderful books, Journeys Out of the Body, but I love Far Journeys. I think it's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a
and
Monroe.
He was a researcher, yeah, from and was really interested in states of consciousness.
And he was a radio guy, wasn't he?
He was. Mutual Broadcasting. Yeah.
Yeah, and he kept popping out of his body, having spontaneous out-of-body experiences.
That's right. And he
thinking
wanted,
he was losing himself.
Yes, and he wanted to know what in the world was going on. And so one of the times after I'd had this amazing experience and I could continue to hear this beautiful voice, this powerful voice of loving intent that I went on to name or it named itself mentor, meaning teacher or guide, and so that's the whole book Agartha is not only the story of that discovery but also the most wonderful spiritual teachings on everything from earth changes to the divine heart to enlightenment to, I mean, things that, you know, that now after all these almost 30 years of spiritual work and study I look at and they're brilliant. And that's what, you know, nothing I was ever told ever refuted what has turned out to be true. I mean,
isn't that wonderful? Yeah. Wow. So let's talk about spirit heals, because that seems like it encharged a whole way of being for you and an exploration, and you've given a lot of service since then, right?
Yes, spirit heals, you know, it's sort of, I have come back to the, I've sort of been a bridge, a pioneer between the worlds of spirituality and physical, emotional healing. And I see it as if physical, our body and our mind and our emotions, instead of body, mind, and spirit, body, mind, and emotions on one plane, and spirit is separate than that. It's not the same as. It is almost as if it's in the center of that triangle, that flat triangle, because spirit-directed healing is what we're all about all the time. It is mending our body. It is rebalancing our emotions. It is coming back in touch with our priorities and with our compassion as human beings. And so spirit-directed, meaning the energy of love, the power of love within us and around us, but within us particularly, we can bring to our lives and our planet and our global community to make change. And so it's the bridge between mind-body healing and the world of spirituality, and that I understand that the power of spirit as a really legitimate healing tool. And so the practices that raise the energy of just regular chi or prana to an enhanced state is through the experience of love and what we can see happens then to our body and our immune system and our heart and our reproductive system in response to that heightened energy.
So do you actually do healing work with people?
Yes.
Oh, is that, that's
yes.
What you do a lot of
yes.
Times.
Yes, and we have started, I've started, you know, about 8 months ago. You know, I've had a school program on the East Coast and the West Coast, and, you know, I've been teaching for
you have your own school?
Yes, for so long. And yet I kept thinking and asking, what more can I be doing? What more can I be doing? And you know, the thought was, you know, when somebody enrolls in a school program, it's expensive because you've got teachers to pay, and all, you know, it's a whole big deal.
Oh, for sure.
But the thought was, reach out to people who need this and may have no way to get to. They can't take the time, they don't have the money, whatever the reason. So we started to do two-day experiences, and I've done like 5 of them around the country, where it said, if you need help and support or healing or guidance or come. And we just ask for a donation at the end for our healing mission. And it's been extraordinary because I feel like we've reached people that otherwise either they didn't know me or they didn't know much about spirituality or they just couldn't have made it happen. And we've had extraordinary gatherings, and I end each one with a healing service that's really quite profound.
Hmm. That sounds wonderful. And you're going to have one soon in Petaluma, I heard.
Yes, and so there's one in Petaluma, which is actually a little more extensive program. It's not a 2-day; it's like a 3.5-day, where it's, you know, a greater depth of information. So it's a little different than those 2 days, but you know, where I think we're each doing what we can do to say this is a very transformational time on our planet.
Oh, it's incredible.
And we each are being pushed. I know you must feel that, to say, you know, what can I be doing? This is, I need to be doing everything within my power to reach out and touch people in the way that's unique to, you know, the work we're doing.
And I've been a lot more reclusive than you, and I'm screaming that very thing right now.
Yeah.
Get me out here. Let's go. It's time, you know. So let's talk about healing. I did the show before you. I talked a lot about different types of healing and so on. And calling, I was writing a book, which I never completed yet, called Calling Up the Healing.
Which
sounds like it goes a little bit with the kind of thing that you're encouraging here, which is using, like, words and using inner focus and using all of that. Can you talk about them?
Yes. One of the, you know, I try to give people a sense of first, that it's a coming together, really, of all the... Our body and mind and emotions, and in order to listen more clearly inside to our true knowing. So I make a distinction between, you know, the activity of our mind as personality or ego and wisdom mind. And what we're trying to do is sort of move from our everyday rational thinking to our own inner guidance. So I often have people put their hands, sort of my trademark is to have people put their hands over the center of their heart chakra, right, that fourth chakra, which governs the immune system and the circulatory system and the lymphatic system. But it's really our connection to deep heart. It's a connection to the universe. So when we put our hands there, what we do is begin to open up a dialogue with our own true self and learn how our thinking self gets in the way and how that self-critic is always in opposition. It's always telling us we can't do what we want. We can't make it happen. We're not going to be successful. You know, that continual oppositional voice, and how to not have to fight with it, but just to sidestep it, how to come down inside to where the true guidance is. So sort of giving people an understanding of how we think and how we process in order to then get to our deeper intuition. And I talk about intuition as intuitive perception, meaning we take our normal intuition and we learn to focus it toward a sense of deeper perception of what's really going on. Now, that can be in a person's body. That can be, you know, in a person's energy field. I mean, you can really focus your, and that's what I teach, to focus your intuition to be able to pull up exact information about a person with their permission if they've asked for your help. I mean, that's sort of the end of our school program, if people go that direction, is to use your intuition in a very direct way with a model that helps you understand if this is what you're sensing, this is the physical system it's related to. For example, if somebody, if a woman comes in with a thyroid problem, and because the thyroid is located in the neck, but it is governed by the endocrine system, which is in the sixth chakra. So that, but the point is that we are, you know, in trying to heal a thyroid condition, where you look is to your family of origin, which is specifically connected to hidden messages. And so what we're trying to do to heal our thyroid is to reclaim our own vision for our life. And so there's a spiritual component, emotional component, a physical system, physical organs. So it all has this wonderful architecture to understand, so we can understand ourselves better.
I love that. I was speaking earlier about a woman, I just heard about it, a woman I know quite well, who was just diagnosed with an enlarged heart. So I've been sitting in the intuitive understanding of what's underneath that. Would you be willing to look at something like that?
Sure.
So she's got an enlarged heart. She's a woman who absolutely is passionate about millions of animals and is trying to do equine facilitating.
Well, it's interesting. The heart energy is, in the way I model, the model I've developed, has three components. One is self-love. The left side of the heart corresponds to love for another person. And the sort of apex, the top part, is love for people beyond your immediate family. And so anything that's happening in the body is really trying to happen emotionally in your life and may or may not be able to find a way to do that. So the expanded energy of her heart. In other words, her love is expanding for herself, for others, but it may not find, she may not feel entirely safe in becoming more visible through that loving process.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, her visibility as the person who is wanting to more openly perhaps change things or love animals, or that expansion is happening on the inside because it can't happen in her life. And see, a lot of it is around, as healers and people that we're trying to step into our purpose, is that the question of being visible in the world is a big piece for men and women, and especially for women, in feeling safe in being either overly criticized, or safe in feeling that somehow we are inadequate in some way, or, you know, we can sabotage ourselves.
And we all evoke the ire of the nation, and they'll come down on you.
Exactly. And it may not be safe. I mean, that may be a reality, but that sort of expanded heart says, I want to expand my life in this arena, but I'm expanding the love for myself. I have to expand me in order to expand my work. They have to go together. I can't get one ahead of the other.
So what do you recommend that a person does with that?
Well, you know, each of the different energy centers, the practice that's the strongest is what I call the healing art of loving touch, and that's putting your hands directly over your heart center, especially if there's a heart problem. And what you're doing is really, is letting your heart know what you want it to do. We forget that our body is listening, and so it listens to all of our thoughts and all of the things we say and don't say, but that loving kindness to understanding ourselves and our needs, and to really put your hands over your heart, which is a caressing of one's physical heart, emotional heart, and spiritual heart. And it's to identify what you want to have happen, to reduce the swelling as I expand my capacity to love myself and live up to what I want to do with my work in the world, for example. So it's a different message you begin to give yourself and your heart and your whole energy field directly.
I like that a lot, actually.
It really works. And, I would love to show you just a little mini practice. Can I do that?
Oh, I'd love that, sure.
Because this is something that... Yeah.
Our listeners are used to having to work when they listen.
All right. Well, here's a good practice. If people can cradle the phone on their neck so that their hands are free, and if you just rub your hands together vigorously, and then separate them about an inch or two, what you feel is the normal prana or chi that's moving around and through the body, right? You can feel that between your hands. It's as if that space is taken up with something. You can't see it, but you can sense that space is filled in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, rub your hands together again vigorously. Separate them several inches. And with your eyes open, looking into that space, picture someone you love with all your heart. Someone you love with all your heart. And feel what happens to your hands. What happens to the inside of your palms?
Oh, my, they just get hot, hot.
They get hot, and they open.
That's right.
It's like your hands begin to get pushed apart. And so what that shows you is when you add the component of love, that the healing response is amped up. The energy is actually changed and becomes more dynamic.
Well, that's
so,
a wonderful exercise.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So when you then rub your hands finally again and put them over your own chest, your own heart, what you know is that same amped up energy is actually entering your body and can be directed to different places, but is available to help healing happen in a very real way.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's wonderful. Thank you for that.
Mm.
And I'd like to also jump around. I don't think we can cover the whole book, but I want to cover the whole idea of women.
Yeah. Oh, there you
can
go.
Can we manage that? We talked earlier about women supporting women,
yes,
and rolling this consciousness through. That's how I took it, is putting this consciousness through where we're actually supporting the deep heart in one another, right?
That's right. And I think women are learning how to build community with women. I mean, I think that we've had a sense of that in the past, but I think there is a more cohesive sense of the need of women to stand together in the world. And that are, you know, so many women, we look around the world and we think on one hand, thank God I was born here and not in Pakistan or Syria or Darfur. But I think what we're really saying is when we stand in a whole way within ourselves, then we hold in a conscious way all women everywhere.
Right.
I mean, I had a dream, and a woman, I was standing next to a woman who was in a camp in Africa, and it was just as far as you could see were women and children and whatever. And in the dream, I was expecting to see, real sad eyes and a broken countenance. Instead, this beautiful woman's face looked back at me as she was holding her child with a sense of assurance, a sense of wisdom, a sense of knowing. And I woke up feeling this just amazing sense of standing with her.
How wonderful.
Even though I wasn't touching her physically, I realized I was touching her consciously by doing my work here.
Excellent. Huh. It made me think, and this is a slight deviation, but have you read The Standing Grandmother?
I haven't.
Okay, well, there's this funny little story about a woman who dressed all up, and people said, why has she been standing in the park all dressed up?
Mm-hmm.
And her granddaughter said she's standing for peace. Over time, many grandmothers joined her, and they all just stood in the park in their best clothes.
That's beautiful. And I think the thing that is so marvelous is that we do whatever we can do with love and with confidence and with delight and joy, we do it, and it's enough. I think that our culture is about what's bigger and better and more and making more money and more, and yet that isn't what satisfies us. You know, women are on that that incredible rack of having to take care of kids and they have jobs they want and I mean we've got to do so many things as women that it's very easy to lose ourselves and to think that we have to keep doing more and more when sometimes we just have to pay attention to what we're doing and feel the benefit of what we've already accomplished or what's right in front of us with our child or with our work or with our book or with the basket we're weaving or with the marketing program we're putting together, or it's to feel the benefit of what we're creating instead of the eternal out there somewhere. It's going to come tomorrow. A lot of illness is really in the tremendous striving for something else and the stress that comes with that always being out of reach because, of course, it always will be.
Right. Yes, it is, isn't it? And I believe you talked a lot about illnesses in the book about.
I do. I talk about especially reproductive imbalances and heart imbalances because I was shocked to discover that 500,000 women a year drop dead from undiagnosed heart problems.
500,000?
Yeah.
In this country or
uh-huh.
also?
Yeah, in this country.
Oh, my.
And so 37,000 deaths a year are attributed to breast cancer and 500,000 to heart disease. So it's like, what is going on in the level of stress that women are experiencing that is generating this incredible increase in heart disease?
Isn't it sort of an easy correlation to make to say, well, golly, if we're racing to do more, to do better, to do more, to do better, and to go faster and to get everybody doing more, isn't that really dangerous for the heart?
It's tremendously dangerous. And a piece that I found that I think is very interesting is that when researchers began to study women's reactions to stress, it's always assumed it was fight or flight for men and women. What they discovered is that that's not true, that a woman's reaction to stress and what creates stress for her is different than a man. And they coined it tend and befriend instead of fight or flight.
Oh,
so,
my.
So for a man, biologically, it is to, you know, to duke it out or to retreat to fight another day. But for a woman, because biologically she's either nursing a child or maybe has small children or is protecting the community, her reaction is to communicate, is to hunker down, figure things out, talk them over, try to create a bridge. And so you'll notice that when a woman is very stressed, what she wants to do is pull together the sort of circle of the wagons of the closest people to her mm-hmm. to kind of hunker down with her to hold the space. Well,
and that's the thing that tears us apart the most, too.
Yes, well, for a woman, when there is a missing component in her wagon train, in her circling the wagons, in her immediate environment of support, then it is a huge impact. So suppose a woman is in a job where, you know, she changes departments, or another manager comes in and she can't, she's not with the same people, or she gets divorced, or a child is having problems. Somebody falls apart in her immediate support circle, and that has catastrophic stress reaction in her life. So what I encourage women to do, for example, if they're trying to heal from a divorce, or they want a partnership, or they're looking for a new a job and they feel like they were done in by their last job, is to imagine that they're filling that space with spirit. In other words, they are filling that hole as if, you know, you think about a tooth, as if you have a bridge, you know, you're gonna build on the two solid teeth and fill the empty space. Mm-hmm. The same thing is that I'm suggesting is it's a placeholder, a spiritual placeholder. You take your hand from your heart where there is that power of love, and you just imagine placing it in the circle where you're missing that relationship. And so then the energy moves around, and it doesn't just go around till it comes, uh-oh, to that friend, disappears, mm-hmm. to that lover, disappears. We have to fill that space in order to protect our heart. Isn't that interesting?
I think that's really interesting, actually. I'm thinking about, have you been through that sort of thing yourself?
Not with heart problems, but certainly with losses and with,
mm-hmm.
sure,
mm-hmm.
sure. And I didn't realize the stress that sets up in a woman's body. I mean,
well, I think it's really interesting because it's a very loving understanding of, here we are trying to be out there and be so independent and
mm-hmm.
so on, and it's like a mistake. It's like telling yourself that who you really are shouldn't be that way.
That's right, and
it's,
you know, that it's like, well, leave your feelings behind. Don't bring them into the boardroom, or don't, you know, it's what you think and not what you feel, which, of course, we know is totally bogus,
mm-hmm.
Because we all operate by what we feel. Our emotions is the strongest single factor in all of our makeup. We immediately react emotionally. However, that is changing as women no longer have to make themselves into something else, but more and more can be powerful in their own right by being able to be in their bodies and to have feelings and to know how to make connection with other people.
But, you know, it's really interesting that the heart is so afflicted right now, because that used to be the thing that took down successful men.
That's right.
And so, and I said many years ago, and I was pretty active in this kind of thing, it's interesting how we just went out into the workplace and we took
yep.
on all their diseases.
That's right. We became,
wore their suits
we tried
and ties.
To, that's right. In order to break into male-dominated environments, we had to become men.
Male, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had
but that's
to.
Changed, hasn't it?
I do believe it has. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it may not be, it may be the same in you know, finance and banking and mortgage companies and, you know, but when I look at, you know, everything from some of the major auto makers whose presidents are women to across the board, not just in not-for-profits, but in, you know, really large corporations, more and more the honoring of what women bring as both the a good balance of the yin and yang.
Oh, that's great. Apparently, my partner's just telling me now that American Express is run by a woman.
Yes, some of the major corporations are. It's really quite
That's exciting.
Amazing. It is exciting.
I think, you know what I think? I think we should have a president who's a woman, but I think we should have a team president, meaning
you know what? It's
going
to be interesting, isn't it, to see what happens with the election and whether, you know, how things line up.
Well, and you're talking about how, like, the group thing and the missing pieces and so on, and I'm going, it's such an intricate time in globalization and things are shrinking, and we really need a team approach.
Yes. Well, we do. We need to do things in conjunction with other people. I mean,
yeah.
We all know that the circle of people adding their best ideas and their best concepts and feeling empowered to make decisions and
activating one another.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. It isn't either or. It isn't you win and I lose. It's we both win.
Well, you know, the relationship, and I want to go into two things, actually, but the relationship of what we're talking about and the fact, just before we were talking about 2012 and all the evolution of the species that's mm-hmm. going on, there's got to be something about, about the basic roles of the male and female and all of that in our evolution that encourages both the, you know, the males becoming more aware of their feminine
absolutely.
Strength.
Oh, I think that...
Or
that,
all of us learning what the feminine strength really is, because that got lost, didn't it?
It did get lost. It absolutely got lost. And I think that, you know, a lot of people who come to my programs are really men or women, but men looking for their divine feminine, looking for that had really terrible mother roles and that and really don't know how to mother themselves. They don't know what that component within themselves is.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I realized is our first relationship with authority, i.e. divinity, comes about as we assume that our parents, they sort of play that role for us as little tiny children, because, of course, they do hold life or death in their hands. But we then assume that somehow divinity is tied to how our mother and father operated in our life, and that mother represents safety and father represents authority. And we need both of those within us, but we have to transform how they actually were, our mother and father in a physical sense, in order to then imagine that we have that sense of wholeness within us, that we can pull up that sense of mother, of divine mother, of infinite mother, the true inner divinity that's whole, mother and father.
It's intriguing that has often, at least for some of us, taken a few years to understand, to conceive of, and so on. And many of the children are born to people who still can't perceive
that's right.
that. You know,
that's right. And the idea
board.
That we have to transform our sense of divinity from just, the Western male god to mother, father, to the total blend, just what we're trying to be as human beings, to be, to have authority, to feel safe, to, you know, to be able to be a whole person means you've got to have both those components alive and well inside your psyche.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I wonder that this, we talked about the evolution of the species and the understanding of the feminine and so on. There are so many difficulties with the reproductive organs, both for male and female,
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, the reproductive system, interesting, because for a woman, it really is about nurturing new beginnings. Just as, you know, the energetic wisdom of the reproductive system follows the actual physical function. So for a woman's ovaries, for example, just as they produce an ovum, release an ovum, the same thing, there are passion, there are dreams, there are our yearning to express ourselves in particular ways. And so, you know, those passions, if we have cysts on our ovaries or ovarian cancer or infertility, or, you know, we want to come back to what do we love, what's important to us, what passions do we have that help us express who we are. And then the uterus is about having a support system, just as it holds the baby until it would be born. It really is the holder, the container for who supports our dream.
Hmm.
And it can be our family, it can be friends, but we need support for our particular dreams, not somebody to immediately rush into, well, it's not going to make money or it's not reasonable or practical. Or we need to have people hold with us the potential for our creative expression.
And you think we're not doing that on a massive level right now?
Oh, yeah, I think we're not. And I think women don't feel that kind of support. And so that shows up, for example, look at fibroids. The number of women with fibroids is huge. And here again, it's something growing. It's a need for support. And so that need is expressed in the growth in something in the uterus instead of in somebody's life. And so... And the birth canal is about having emotional belief enough in yourself to birth your dream. So from the dream to the holding of the dream to the actual giving it form. And then our breasts are about holding on to and counting as good, as successful, all the different adventures that we've had. For example, we look back and we say, oh, well, this job didn't work. Well, this relationship didn't work. Well, you know, instead, what we need to be able to do is to be able to, like jewels on a string, that we are saying, I did this, I did this, I did this, this was an experience. We need to count them all as
count
important.
Our experiences.
And we need to hold on to all of them because that, you know, our breasts are about nurturing what we've already given birth to.
Hmm.
And so if we discount everything that we've done, then it takes away from the energy of our breasts.
And then what about the prostate is really under siege right now as well.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And so for a man, the testes are similar to the woman's ovaries. But for a man, rather than nurturing new beginnings, the sort of overall energy is what you might think of as delivering from the source, meaning just like a physical ejaculation, it's an immediate response. A woman holds on and nurtures and develops over time. A man needs an immediate response to his activity. And so the prostate is where, you know, the semen and the fluid, where the fluid is united with the semen so that it can actually be moved, so it becomes fluid. So a man's desire to create becomes fluid and then is ejaculated, you know, through the penis. So look at the time, look where men at an age where they develop prostate problems is where there's no immediate feedback to their activities.
Right, and in this society, that's really pretty common, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, they're getting ready to retire or they no longer have the clout in the business world. They are feeling more and more impotent. There's no return on their...
Even their sex life isn't very good at this point.
No,
yeah.
No. And so, you know, the whole piece says I'm losing ground, and you know, there's nothing, there's no power here in what I'm doing or what I can expect in return. So
if we return to the love, the actual love energy, you think that could have, if we would pay more attention to our own deep feelings and our love, whether you're male or female.
Well, I do, and I think that particularly with a man, for example, I mean, biologically, just as we're saying the fight or flight. A man is encouraged, or somebody with a very strong male headset needs to feel that they are supporting, taking care of, as if they're circling the perimeter. You know, perimeter they're caring for, and that means in return, those they're caring for are intimate with them and love and respect and treasure them. When you look at relationships today, many times. A guy or somebody with a strong male headset feels like what they're really a money bag, you know. I mean, that they have to go out. Their only major contribution is that they're producing the money, and
right.
So there's no sense of intimacy or being respected or loved, or so there's a real breakdown there.
Do you think we've lost the value of nurturing in that sense? What I mean is, we don't seem to be confident about nurturing each other. Everybody's afraid of losing independence, or
yes,
that's what it seems like.
Yes. Yes, and I think that we're also preoccupied with what our own needs are, that many times we're blind to what the other person is needing. And see, this is where, you know, spiritual growth really comes in, because if we can manage to understand and explore what's going on with us and be inquiring into who we are and our actions and our attitudes and what we're, how we're living, then we're much more apt to be responsive to someone else as opposed to be totally lost in our own unexplored attitudes or fears or angers or, you know, totally self-consumed.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with that? So I'm interested in these groups that you're doing and also the school and the classes, and this book is absolutely packed and wonderful, and I keep plucking out some of the concepts instead of referring to the book. But
well,
really,
you know, it is, and I have a lot.
It's like a workbook.
It is a lot in here with the attitude shifts. I love those. I have little flowers in the margin, a little indication that says, pay attention to this thought. But then at the end of each chapter, those are put together in what I call attitude shifts, because it's like, all right, I understand that these concepts. What do I do? How do I make these shifts
right.
in my thinking or in my actions? And so I wanted people to have, and, you know, this is a great book for book clubs, for people to get together and study. And, I mean, it's, you know, people have said things like, when I hold on to the book, I feel supported. I feel like I'm okay. I feel like, and I think comfort is a big deal for women. It's not just more information, though there's lots of that, but there's a feeling of comfort, of being seen, of being okay.
You know what I felt when I picked it up?
What?
I felt softer.
Yes. Yes.
Which is something that we all would like. This is how I think of it. I would like the right to be softer.
Yes.
Does
yes.
that make sense?
It does, and the safety to be softer and not be taken advantage of, you know, being
yeah,
more.
You know, it's okay. It's not lazy in this society,
that's right.
or it's not going after your dream or whatever.
That's right. That's right. I think we are so, you know, pushed to produce, and I think that ultimately, you know, today I was writing a piece for a monthly audio CD that I do for people. It's a monthly spiritual teaching, and I took some time and I walked over to the living room of our building, and I sat down and I was watching the doves, the morning doves, evening doves feeding in the bird feeder. Of course, we've got about 2 feet of snow here in New Hampshire, and,
oh, really?
And
you can have it.
Yeah, and the sun was setting, and it was really beautiful. And I thought, you know, how lovely to just take the time to look up from what I'm so busily doing, and just look out the window, and just to say, you know, this is an important part of my day, too, to take a few minutes to take in what's around me and not be so driven. You know, we're all so driven.
Let's do it.
Accomplish.
That's where we miss nurturing each other, even in relationships, isn't it?
We do. Mm-hmm. We do, and I just know how very, very important that is for all of us, and especially for...
And for our health, Meredith. You were really clear about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've worked with... My goodness, I can't even think how many thousands of people over all these years. And so I have, I've learned a lot from the people I've worked with, and they've really helped me hone a lot of the sort of architecture of this model that I teach in the school. Of
yeah,
English.
I want to know more about your classes and what is the outcome. Do people get a degree or do they?
When they take, yes, the programming that we have our two-day programming, but the school programming this year is entitled Spirit Heals, and it's only for women this year, which is,
oh my.
It's always, the last 10 years it's been for men and women, but I feel such a call to have women really step into who they are in a better way. And so I'm taking just up to 50 women in each of the two programs for, it's 3 days, 3.5 days, twice with several months in between of teleclasses and mentoring, and then can go on to a third module and certification, yeah, and a practicum and certification in this model.
And what's the certification called? I mean, is it something?
It's called Certified Intuitive Healer, and you're an intuitive healer. You're certified as a still point intuitive healer.
Yay, this sounds absolutely wonderful. And I have to say, I love your website. Talk about your website or give
at
least
the
name of it.
Oh, thank you. I wanted something that was striking and that also made people feel like there was a lot to do, and it
took me a long time, I have to tell you.
There's a lot of pieces, and we're gradually trying to streamline it because it may have too many pieces, but wanting people to feel nurtured. I mean, we have lots of things that they can do. They can draw an angelic messenger card. They can sign up for our free monthly 15-minute prayer service over the telephone.
I love that idea.
Oh, it is so marvelous where... Several hundred people come every time, and we record it. You can download it or listen to it, and we design a different prayer every month that you can download. And it's to build energy for global consciousness, to really up
Excellent.
The ante in the world, as well as for our personal healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the school program I've been doing for about 10 years, and the White Mountains, is all, and also the Institute of Noetic Science in Petaluma.
Okay.
And so it starts in February, the one in Petaluma does. And
so you do it on the East Coast and the West
Coast?
Yes,
April is when it starts at the White Mountains. And Petaluma, the Institute of Noetic Science, it starts in February. So
great.
It's really quite a
so
wonderful.
So a person who's interested might want to take it and become accredited and develop a whole,
That's
business.
Right. Mm-hmm. You add that credentialing then to whatever you're doing. It's a wonderful way to understand the movement of energy and what produces imbalance and what to do about it. So instead of just, for example, we may sense there's a problem here or an imbalance here, but that doesn't help the person if you can't tell them what it is,
mm-hmm.
where it comes from, what
mm-hmm.
to do about it. And so you can get, using your own intuitive perception, very specific in understanding how to help somebody and how to help yourself. You know,
wonderful. Well, your book is wonderful. It has a lot of information. I mean, it's got a lot of directive information
mm-hmm.
that can keep people. I mean, it's like a course in itself, isn't it?
It is.
Like a school.
It
is this the textbook as well for your class?
It is going to be. We're going to certainly go in other directions, but there's so much here. I want to be able to highlight aspects of it with people because some of these things are so very important in our healing and in our understanding of how to help our body and how to have a better life, how to get over some of the things that have just flattened us.
Yeah, I think it's evolutionary to go back into the power of the feminine with a whole light on the evolution of that and
mm-hmm.
what that can mean for the planet. The book is called Spirit Heals, Awakening a Woman's Inner Knowing for Self-Healing by Meredith Young Sowers, and I really recommend, you know, what's the website?
Stillpoint, that's STILLPOINT, one word, .org,
okay.
stillpoint.org.
And I find that, I just went right to it when I Googled your name, so.
Good.
But I really thank you. You've inspired me so much, and I'm sure you've inspired our listeners, and I love this book.
Well, I'm so glad, and it's so much fun to talk about this work, and because there's so many wonderful directions to go, and how marvelous that you're making this opportunity available to your listeners in the work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. I love it. And I am also, like you, committed to getting that wave of love going
That's
around
right.
the world, and
That's
we're
right.
doing it.
That's so right.
Thanks very much, Meredith, and we'll
oh,
keep in touch
you.
With your website and see what's up with you.
Wonderful. Thank right. you so much.
Many, many blessings.
All right, you too.
Oh, and happy season.
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
All righty. God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, my, that was a highly charged, wonderful experience for me anyway. I'd love to get feedback from you. You can email me, Veronica, at veronicaentwistle, no H in Entwistle, .com. That's Veronica at veronicaentwistle, ENTWISTLE.com. Now, my next show is going to be on Christmas Day. So we're having a pre-recorded interview with a wonderful channel named Bashar. And that will be for our Paradigm Shifter. And also, Radiance by Design, my daughter, my stepdaughter, Jane, is going to interview me. So I'm going to be the pre-recorded interview on Radiance by Design. So we'll see how you enjoy that. And I really believe in this season of the year being a perfect time for us to recreate who we are. And some of it's painful because of memory, but we can do it. We've got lots of techniques. And Thursday night I'm going to be on with Jackie Salvitti again. We're still working on the shadow because the shadow is infinitely deep. And I don't know what her subject is this week, but tune in at 8 o'clock on Thursday night, and I'll be there with Jackie Salvitti. That's 8 o'clock West Coast time. For those of you on the East Coast, 11 o'clock. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying, much love to all of you. As Meredith said, it's that power of love flowing around the world that really can make a difference. And also, as we put our hands flat on our chest and feel the love of our deep heart, we do a lot of healing. So I place my hand on the flat of my chest and send you all much love and see you, well, I'll be on tape for Christmas Day. For those of you who celebrate Christmas, for the great season, we'll talk soon. Good night.